Welcome to the Book Nook on WYSO. And today we're going to be doing some verbalization with Gary Steingart, who was first on the program, gosh, when was it? Early 90s. He returns today. He's got a new book out. He joins us by telephone from somewhere in Gotham, I believe.
That's right. The Isle of Mahanata.
Gary, gosh, what was it, 92 you came out to Yellow Springs for your first book? I think.
That would have been great. That would have meant I had published my first book at 19 or 20. That would have been great.
Oh, but no, sadly, 2002.
2002, that's right. I wish I was that old, yeah.
Well, I bet you don't, because what are you, 39?
I'm 38, yeah.
I see you made the cut on this... was it a New Yorker list of authors that they think are hot stuff?
Yeah, the 20 under 40 list. I'm sort of the grandfather of the list at age 38. I think the youngest is 24, so I'm over the hill.
Well, congratulations on that. Back in 92 or 2002 or whatever century that was, you were, would you say unknown is a adequate term for what you were then?
I was less than unknown. People didn't even want to hear about me, you know, so I was in the negative column somewhere.
And I remember you had some kind of a, I don't know if I'd call it a blog at that early date, maybe a weblog of your book tour for that first book.
That's right. They asked me to I was a pioneer. I was so far ahead of my time, and they had a website for me back in the days when there weren't that many websites called, I think it was called RussianDeb.com, because my first book was called Russian Debutante's Handbook. So, yeah, I blogged about visiting Ohio, I think.
Yeah, and I know that's vanished into the ether, but I did preserve the section where you described after our interview walking around the campus of Antioch, and I think you compared it in your mind with your alma mater of Oberlin.
That's right. I'm all about Ohio, you know. I did spend 4 years in Oberlin, Ohio, so it brought back a lot of memories. The Antioch campus felt like a very good place to be.
Your new book, Gary, is called Super Sad True Love Story, and it's a book that's set a little bit in the future, I think, but reading it, I thought to myself, you know, this is very Jules Verne kind of territory, because we read it and we go, oh, yeah, right, that'll never happen. But sadly, the sad part is it all seemed like it could.
I think it could. I think it is happening in many ways. You know, when I started writing this book in 2006, I kind of had a feeling that things would go badly for our country, and I grew up in the Soviet Union, so I kind of know it when a big empire begins to teeter on the edge. And so I thought, okay, what if something crazy happened, like Lehman Brothers and Bear Stearns collapsed? And then I took a ride in a Chevy, and I thought, you know, this is a really bad car. I mean, what happened if GM and Ford would collapse and Chrysler? And as I started writing this book, all these things started happening. So I started having to race ahead of reality. So by the end of the book, you know, the whole country collapses and is bought out by a Norwegian hedge fund. So, you know, it was, it's tough to write, even speculative fiction these days, because we don't really live in a world where there's any kind of present. Everything is set to the future. So you really have to race ahead.
The book consists of diary entries and also cyber traffic in a way. I guess you would call it that. That's probably an arcane term at this point, but, The diary entries are by a guy named Lenny Abramov, and he's a little bit like you, isn't he? Just a little bit?
I think all my characters have been a little bit like me, maybe the exception of the Misha Weinberg, the hero of Absurdistan, who is 325 pounds. And although I do like to feast on many animals, I'm still not up to that kind of girth yet.
And Lenny is on the cusp of 40. And as the book opens, he falls hopelessly in love with a woman.
That's right. Her name is Eunice Park. She is 15 years younger than him, the daughter of Korean immigrants. The problem with their relationship is that 15 years may not seem like a terribly long distance difference in age, but in the world in which Lenny and Eunice live, Lenny still belongs to the old world, the world where books actually exist, where people still ruminate about things. And Eunice, in this future, she may be one of the smarter people around of her generation, but this is a generation that is mostly interested in going into this thing called global teens and ass luxury and shopping. So Lenny thinks she's very smart. He calls her my reluctant sentence monger because she's able to put together a sentence with a subject and a predicate, which in the futuristic world they live in is highly unusual.
I think the feature that struck me as the most eerie and also the another paucity was these poles that are along the street.
Yes, the poles measure one's credit rating and broadcast that credit rating onto the street so anybody, as soon as you pass by, everybody knows what your credit rating is. I recently applied for a mortgage, so it was interesting for me to constantly have my own credit rating reviewed. And of course, a few years ago, mortgages were just there for the asking. You could take whatever you wanted. But these days, obviously, after the debacle, the financial debacle, there's a great deal of scrutiny. You know, applying for a mortgage was like applying to Harvard or something. You had to jump through a lot of hoops. So I kind of felt like the world I was describing was already coming true.
This is a world where the so-called low net worth individual with scorn and derision.
Yes. This feels very much like living in New York City, a universe where people with low net worth are treated with scorn and derision. And in fact, it feels often like Manhattan has become just an island of millionaires. I was at some bar and somebody introduced themselves as a VC and I said, oh, you're a Viet Cong? And they said, no, I'm a venture capitalist. I was quite surprised by that. And in the book, in fact, most of the what's left of the New York intelligentsia is forced to move out to Staten Island, which is now the hipster neighborhood. They weren't part of this, financial elite.
Gary Steingart joins us. His new book is Super Sad, True Love Story. You employ a lot of acronyms, and many of them are not definable on public radio.
Yes. It's true. I know. Even when I do readings and there's any kids in the room, I have to tone it down a little bit because a lot of these acronyms are quite raunchy, to say the least. The one that I sort of used recently is Timatov, which sounds like a Hebrew word almost, T-I-M-A-T-O-V, which young people, when they see Lenny, they say, ah, Timatov, which means, think I'm about to openly vomit. So I've been practicing saying that one.
Speaking of Judaism, I kept trying to think of the right Yiddish word for Lenny. What would it be, do you think?
Well, you know, some people say, oh, maybe he's a schmuck or a schlemiel. I don't think so. That's a little too, that's not exactly right. I think he's more of a nebbish, which is somebody who's been a little bit too hurt by life and is unable to fully put himself out there and be a, I guess the word that's used in college campuses is agency. He doesn't have very much agency.
Mm.
He's a shy man, he's very much hurt by his background and his past, and he's unable to fully assert himself with anything, with his boss, with the society at large, and most of all, he's unable to assert himself with Eunice, whom he loves very, very, very much, but with whom he's unable to quite complete the deal for most of the book.
But he is a mensch.
He's a mensch. He's definitely a mensch, which is quite a compliment. He's definitely a mensch, but, you know, he's a mensch nebbish, which is a great combination, because I hope that that's the kind of person that one both feels sorry for and learns to love at the same time.
I love the device that you employ of having Lenny's diary entries, and then we get to read Eunice's email contacts and text messages with family members and a good friend of hers and see what she's thinking of Lenny at the same time that he's fantasizing about her.
Yes.
And Eunice, she's a consumer. There's something very sweet about her.
I think so. This is one of the first books I've written, perhaps the first book I've written, where the more I wrote it, the more I began to feel something for these characters. I subject my characters to so many awful things. I mean, God knows what I did to poor Misha in Absurdistan. But in this book, I became very tender toward my characters, especially toward Eunice. And I almost thought, my God, you know, they really do deserve each other. They both have these dysfunctional immigrant families, his Russian, her Korean. I almost wish things worked out better for them. And but it's not their fault. You know, it's the society that grinds them to a pulp. And this reminded me very much of, or at least maybe this was an inspiration, was, of course, Orwell's 1984, in which is a book I recall quite well, not just for its totalitarian aspects, but for the fact that Julia and Winston really are in love, and they do hang, you know, they hold on to each other despite everything that the society throws at them. In the end, of course, that they can't do so, but they try. They love each other, truly.
The 1984 Orwell symbolism combined with the siren in the background is a wonderful coincidence.
My building is actually on fire as we're doing this interview. I think it'll be okay, but there's a fire going on.
You had an interview in the New York Times Magazine the other day. Your book was recently reviewed by Michiko Kakutani, and she loved it.
Yes.
I was astonished. I
was too.
I don't usually agree with her on anything. I was so pleased to see you getting these kinds of reviews. I went to the Daily Beast, and I saw your video contributions to Book Beast the other day.
Uh-huh.
Very funny. Very funny stuff.
That was a very nice interview. We went to Stuyvesant High School, my old high school. Actually, an old friend of mine conducted the interview, and we just sat there, and so many memories, you know. It was, Stuyvesant was a wonderful place for me.
And I've also seen your trailer, Gary.
Yes, the trailer where I am illiterate. It was quite great.
You can't read.
I can't read. I had so much fun being illiterate for this trailer. It was really wonderful. And we have some great stars in the trailer. We have James Franco, who was a student of mine, who's a great writer himself. We have Jay McInerney, Jeff Eugenides, is Mary Gateskill, Ed White. It's a really star-studded trailer in which the terrible truth is revealed that I may be an okay writer, but I've never learned how to read.
In the Jay McInerney segment with the Seven Sisters accompaniment there.
Mm-hmm, Mount Holyoke.
Yeah, are you fishing around in the garbage can in the background? Is that what you're doing?
I am in the background. This sort of got lost in the editing, but one of the bits was that I am paid in... my advance is actually paid not in cash. Random House doesn't think I deserve just cash, so I'm paid in smoked meat, a lot of pickles, pickled tomatoes, and three debutantes delivered annually from Mount Holyoke. And in that scene that you see with Jay McInerney, I'm actually fishing for pickled tomatoes.
And I'm guessing there's an inside joke there that maybe Random House has a lot of publicists who come out of Mount Holyoke.
When we did a casting call for Mount Holyoke graduates, there was no shortage of applicants.
That's a wild guess on my part.
That's a pretty good wild guess.
Okay. Gary Steingart.
We thought a vast or two, but in the end, you know, why not go for the best?
Gary Steingart joins us, and his new book is Super Sad True Love Story. This is a world where your nebbish Lenny has this collection of moldering books that he treasures. And I connected with him on that level so deeply. When we read the newspapers and we see that everyone's going to electronic books or they're not reading books at all,
right.
It really jives with your whole plot, with these people all walking around with their devices that plug them into this cyber world. And at the point where suddenly they all lose that, it's a world where people are devastated. And each of us thinks what it would be like to lose our high-speed connection and how frustrating and upset we would be. And it's all there.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's the idea was I had a cable repairman come to my house. And I, like Lenny, I have this incredibly large wall of books where I have, you know, thousands of books in my apartment. And I happened to have a 25-inch television screen, which is considered very small. And this television repairman was shocked, you know, and he said, "Oh, my God, why you got all them books in your house and such a small TV?" You know, he was just very upset. And then he said, "Well, at least you got them all neat. They're not just lying around. They're on the shelves, you know." Like, it would be this terrifying calamity if there were books lying around. Maybe you would trip over them on the way to the television set or something.
I'm not a person who frequents bars very often, and I think one reason for that is because I can remember in my youth going into these places, and you'd get that feeling of, well, he's the third least sexy person in the room. And you have translated this into the modern age, this whole sense of rating people in this kind of a situation.
Yeah. Well, I think we're being rated almost by the second. You know, there's my credit rating. Amazon is now ranking my book. We're always being ranked or rated somehow. And in this future, there's this device called the apparat. And as soon as my Nebish Lenny walks into, let's say, a bar, everyone else rates him. So he immediately knows if he's, let's say, the 18th ugliest person in the bar. And also maybe he's the 7th richest person in the bar. And all these different things. I can't even say some of these ratings on family radio, but they're pretty, you know, pretty obscene, because every little bit of him is being rated as soon as he walks into any kind of public space. And that's one thing Lenny likes about Eunice, is that whenever he stands next to her, his ratings go up because she's so beautiful.
Right. And as they pass through New York, most of the book takes place in New York City. There are military things going on. And the explicit warning that by observing this activity, you agree to think that it never happened.
Right. There is there's all these, let's say, armored personnel carriers, tanks, troops, National Guardsmen everywhere, and the signs they have everywhere is, you know, that by reading this sign, you have denied the existence of this tank or armored personnel carrier and implied consent. So citizens are required to quickly deny the fact that they've actually seen the tank or the troops or whoever it is out there, which is, you know, they're just, it's a slightly legalistic maneuver in a society that's very quickly falling apart and pretty soon won't even need any laws, because they won't apply. The whole country will be will surrender to certain foreign powers.
So by the time this book comes out in paperback, it'll be like reading today's news.
Huh? I know. I'm so glad that we didn't wait any longer in publishing this book, because we are careening toward having it become reality, which is sad. You know, I don't. You know, this is one of those books I was writing where I thought this kind of hits home. My last books, you know, so some of my friends said, okay, you wrote about some country, some abstract country called Absurdistan. But in this book, you know, it's the Walmarts, it's the Home Depots that are burning, and that hits a little closer to home.
And everything has consolidated. The names of companies are long run-on sentences of familiar names all linked together. China owns us, no big surprise. And we're not producing a whole lot besides cascades of debt.
Right, exactly. I would say that, when I was started writing this book, one of the companies, I think it's called Lando Lakes GM Ford, and I thought, you know, GM Ford are going to be, they're just not great companies. But Lando Lakes, at least they produce butter, you know, and we're always going to need butter. So in my future, Lando Lakes is one of the major corporations, because it still has something that it needs to make. You know, you can't, you know, it doesn't make sense to import butter from China, I guess, because it takes quite a while for it to get here. But hopefully we'll still have a few cows and some butter. So if I had any money to invest, I would put it all into Lando Lakes.
The book is Super Sad, True Love Story. Gary Steingart wrote it. He joins us by telephone from New York City, somewhere in New York City. Are you in Staten Island? Is that?
No, I wish.
Is that the really hot place to be now?
Oh, it's going to be hot soon. I can just feel it. I mean, the views are so beautiful. You know, you can look out on Manhattan. You don't have to live in Manhattan when you can just look out on it. It's a wonderful place. It needs better food, but I think it's coming. I think some really good food is coming to Staten Island. Sri Lankan food.
You've really taken to being an American writer, haven't you?
Yeah, all I do is fantasize about ethnic food. That's as American as you get, you know. Hurry in a hurry.
You're originally from St. Petersburg, is that right?
Yes, or Leningrad, as they called it back in the day.
And how old were you when you came to this country?
I was 7 years old.
Are your parents anything like Lenny's parents in the book?
Well, they're, you know, as with all satire, you take something that may ring true and you sort of expand it into something completely different. And my parents are actually quite luckier than Lenny's parents. Lenny's parents are those kinds of immigrants who were very well educated in their home country and then came to America and did not get the jobs at the level. Lenny's father was an engineer, and he had to become a janitor in America, whereas my father was lucky enough to have been an engineer in Russia and to have gotten a job as an engineer in America. So he doesn't quite have the same weight on his shoulders as Lenny's father does. And consequently, I don't have the same kind of problems of having a father who had to suffer that much as Lenny's father did.
Parental relationships are big in this book. Eunice's relationships with her parents are really a key element in the story. And then you have someone that we've just kind of ignored, the elephant in the room, and that is the youthful villain, the boss.
Yes.
Tell us about this company where Lenny works and his boss.
Well, Lenny works for a very nice futuristic company called Post Human Services, and they cater to the very, very rich, by which I mean not just high net worth individuals, but people with 20, 30 million or much more to their net worth. And the company sells the idea that you can live forever through a whole combination of surgeries and various interventions on the cellular level. And Lenny doesn't want to die either, and his whole life is oriented around trying to gather enough money so that he can get some of these so-called dechronification treatments. And his boss is actually approaching 70, or actually over 70, but because he's able to afford these treatments, he actually looks a lot younger than Lenny, who's 39, but looks like a very much older man. So whenever they go to a restaurant or a bar, Lenny is frequently mistaken for his boss's older brother, even though there's about 30 years difference between them.
And his boss, it takes us a long time, I think, to really figure out what his thing is, and we don't really want to talk about that because it gives away too much, but he's a fascinating character.
Yeah, I thank you. I hope so. He's, you know, like many people, many very wealthy, privileged Americans, he can't believe that he's going to die one day. I mean, that just doesn't seem to be part of the American dream, you know, dying. So it's quite a shock for him. And so he does everything in his powers to try to reverse that. And he has a whole bunch of people who want to do the same. This actually does have a relation to reality, because there are a lot of plans. You know, there's a Ray Kurzweil writes about this, Aubrey de Grey, about these movements to sort of be a post-human movement in which we're all downloaded or something into this great mainframe in the sky. And the idea of dying is so anathema to most people. What's interesting about a lot of people who do subscribe to this is that they're almost uniformly men. Women, maybe because they are able to reproduce and maybe that's a kind of immortality, are less keen on joining these, I guess cults isn't the right word, but these movements.
Gary Steingart joins us. His book is Super Sad, True Love Story. I understand you love your iPhone.
Yeah, I recently fell in love with it. It's not a pretty relationship. It's a very abusive relationship where the iPhone constantly abuses me. It doesn't write. It doesn't call. Sometimes it writes and calls too much. It treats me sort of the way Eunice treats Lenny for large portions of the book. It's a mean mistress, but it's so gorgeous that there's no way I can look away. It's just a very, very hot device.
And the Daily Beast stuff, obviously I got that from the Daily Beast. You've got these little short, they're about minute-long video segments that they put on the blog of you doing this interview and at Stuyvesant, as you mentioned. Mm. And I think it gives viewers a good flavor of what you're about and what this book is about. And some of it's kind of profane, but very funny. Do you think of yourself as a novelist more than a humorist?
I don't even know anymore. Who knows? I am me, and I just, my publicist made me join this thing, Facebooker or whatever it's called. You can find me. And the thing they call me on Facebooker, I barely even exist. I'm not a... you can't friend me. You have to like me, which is goes back to, I guess, Hebrew school. I've always wanted people to like me, and it's been so hard. They called me public figure on that thing, and I guess that's what a writer is these days, are the days of being, kind of small, furry marmot sitting in your apartment typing away or in your house somewhere. That's all gone, because if you do that, nobody will read your book, unless you're... unless you're Kurt Vonnegut or something, or J.D. Salinger before they died, they were able to do that. But they're from the old school of writers, where people would just respect writers for being who they are, for just the written work. But now you're a multimedia experience, and there's no way around that.
Somehow I'm getting this flashback of the old Johnny Carson show and you coming on as a guest.
Wow. To have a writer on a guest like that, a show like that would be something.
He used to have writers on there.
Yeah, that's what I mean. I mean, it would be, can you imagine today, what's his name? Who's the big guy? I don't even watch that much TV. David Letterman.
You don't see that happening? You don't see Letterman getting you on?
Oh, my goodness, I don't think so. What would I say to him? No, I'm just a writer,
But you've got a great publicist. Anything is possible.
Anything. If she can do that, though, I would, I would just pass out, my goodness. To have a mere writer, the lowest of the low on the food chain, appear on David Letterman, my lord.
It's possible.
My stars.
It's possible. Well, I love the book. And
thank you so much.
I know you're excited about going out on book tour for it.
I am. I'm sorry I'm not stopping by Ohio. I wish they would send me over to Yellow Springs again. That was a great, great stop.
Well, we'll have to come find you somewhere and just show up in Chicago when you're on book tour and surprise you.
Please, and put me in a sack and carry me back to Ohio. That would be great.
Well, Gary, it's always a pleasure. Every time you put out a book, which, I have to wait a while. I have to be patient. I always look forward to the opportunity to interview you.
Thank you so much. Likewise.
The book is Super Sad True Love Story, and my guest has been Gary Steingart for The Book Nook. I'm Vic Mekunis. Tune in for The Book Nook next week, when we'll have a very special interview with the gentleman who just celebrated his 91st birthday. Bill Hooper is a longtime resident of Yellow Springs, Ohio, and he joins us on the program to talk about a little book that he just wrote, as well as a lot of other things. That's The Book Nook with Bill Hooper next week. Book Nook is recorded at Soundspace in Yellow Springs and engineered by Chris Hertzler.